Sandy Toksvig, and thank you for joining me for the News Quiz Extra, coming from the Radio Theatre in London's Broadcasting House. It's crammed with jokes and silliness rescued from the cutting room floor, creating a more feature-length episode. As the Oscar nominations are out, you might like to think of it as the News Quiz Director's Cut. Modesty forbids me from naming the likely winner in the smallest presenter of a topical radio quiz category, but safe to say, I shall be enjoying the post-acceptance speech bubbly. Anyway, on with the show.
We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with an advertisement from the staff notice board of a high street bank, read by Carolyn Brown.
Does anyone have a baby Annabelle doll in good condition that needs to be passed on to a good home? This is a replacement for my daughter.
And our thanks to Andrew Greystone for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Rebecca Front. And opposite them on my left, Hugo Rifkin and Steve Punt. Jeremy, listen to this. All I really want is money in my pocket, cash in my hand, umbrella in my wallet. All I really want. Jeremy, what has managed to grow while everything around it is shrinking?
Deficit.
Yes.
Yeah, $1 trillion. Go us.
Yeah.
We've got a $1 trillion deficit. I put my hand up straight away. 200 grand of that is mine. You will get it, Woolwich Building Society, but it's going to take me a while. It's going to, you know, probably the rest of my working life. Say, we'll just do it a month at a time, if that's okay. But, yeah, the government are not looking as cocky as they once did. Danny Alexander was on Newsnight. He looked not so much like a rabbit caught in the headlights as a rabbit tied to a chair while Michael Madsen dances around to Stuck in the Middle with You. And even Osborne, that glint is gone, the shine's come off of him, because he's had to face certain economic realities, mainly that the economy is not a person. The economy can't just dip into its trust fund when its property portfolio takes a hit.
Can I make an economics geek point? Actually, it's not the deficit that's gone up, it's the debt that's
gone
up. The deficit has gone down while the debt goes up.
Okay.
The distinction, of course you understand the distinction between the deficit and the debt.
I know.
Basically what you have to imagine you owed me 10 biscuits. Yeah.
That seems likely.
And you're repaying me at a rate of 2 biscuits a day.
Right.
And you get 2 biscuits a day, but unfortunately you can't help yourself from eating 1 biscuit a day.
Right.
So you have to borrow another biscuit from me in order to give me my 2 biscuits.
Yes.
Thus your debt goes up to 11 biscuits.
Yeah.
And you have an extra one biscuit deficit. Surely I can't make it any clearer than that.
Why do they not explain it like that on the news? No.
That's why they're relieved it's finally got to a trillion. Because a trillion is a number that sounds like a child made it up.
Yeah. Also, the Americans' trillion is different to our trillion. The number of zeros is different.
They have a different billion as well.
They do have a different billion.
Their billion is a million, and ours is 1,000 million.
Yeah.
And I don't know what our trillion is.
No.
All
this I know. This is why the biscuit thing is better, really.
Yeah. Yes,
I thought it was rather sweet that Mervyn King spoke up.
Yes.
Mervyn King does look exactly like Frank Morgan in The Wizard of Oz.
He does.
He absolutely does. So when he spoke this week somewhere in Brighton and said, it'll be all right, this crisis will end because, well, they all do eventually. You just think that is basically him as The Wizard of Oz saying, there's no place like home. There's no place like... Just keep clicking your heels, we'll be fine. I think we're all in very big trouble.
There he was in Brighton urging against despair, and you had a sense as he left the camera that he was going to take off all his clothes, fold them neatly and walk into the sea.
We can't pay it back, it's too much. Can't we just do the washing up at the International Monetary Fund? It's gone so badly wrong that even Nick Clegg has said something this week.
Do you know, I was thinking about this, Jeremy, and I was thinking that we ought to make more room for Nick, because he does try to get into the news all the time. So we're going to have a new thing on the show, and we're going to have a look in Nick Clegg Corner. So I'll give an extra point to anybody who can say what the new thing was that Nick Clegg came up with this week. He's always got something. Do you know what was exactly the thing?
Oh, this one was about raising the personal tax threshold.
Yeah.
But bringing that forward a bit by a couple of years. It's never going to happen.
No. He said, I can't tell you exactly what's going to be in the budget because it hasn't been decided yet.
And they won't tell me anything.
No, and George won't let me look. I think that was it. But bless his heart. He said, people look to the Liberal Democrats to keep this coalition anchored in the centre ground. Anchor a pedalo. Britain's national debt has, for the first time, risen to over £1 trillion. That's the first time economics has had a big cheer like that, hasn't it? The national debt now places Britain in the same rank as Italy. And fittingly, David Cameron has ordered a hot tub and some strippers for number 10. Did you read my favourite story of the week? Was the couple who've won £40 million on the Euro lottery. And I said, oh, quite a lot of money, isn't it? And he said, what are you going to do? She said, well, my husband's going to have a box at Old Trafford and I'm going to have a new carpet for the landing. At 2 points to Jeremy. And Rebecca, you got an extra point for your Nick Clegg information.
For being swotty.
For being swotty, yes. Rebecca, who wants to promote human rights by curbing them?
David Cameron went to Strasbourg to talk to the European Court on Human Rights.
Yep.
To try to curb some of them. I mean, he basically went and delivered a teenage-sounding speech, which went something like, oh, my God, just let me get on with it, OK? What is your problem? I mean, if I want to deport people, I should be allowed to just, like, deport people. I think that was the official text, anyway. So he went and did that on his way to where he is now, the World Economic Forum. And the only reason I mentioned that is because I wanted to be able to say Davos in my best Doctor Who voice. Every time I hear it, I just imagine that there are swooshy doors and strange aliens with two heads. And
but
they're
you're
all
right,
at,
you never,
Davos.
You never hear people say, I'm going on holiday, where are you going?
Davos.
Yeah, it's only ever to do something dull, isn't it?
That's because it's all full of sort of secret industrialists and politicians, so you're not allowed to go on holiday there. It's a secret compound.
Right.
Should I say it one more time before I carry on with the answer? Davos.
Is it a volcano where the top comes off and a rocket comes out?
Yes, it is. Yes,
there's a man
really
inside
is.
Stroking a cat.
Yeah.
Anyway, did you understand it all? Because there was this thing about the sunset clause. Did you understand all this?
Well, I think what David Cameron wants to do is he was saying, look, it's absolutely fine that people can come to you and say, we've had our case heard in all the courts in the land and we're still not happy with the verdict. We want to go to the European court.
Yeah.
But we would only like to give them a year to do that.
Oh.
Which seems perfectly reasonable, given that I think we all know that the justice system works incredibly fast and efficiently, doesn't it?
Well, because Cameron was furious about the decision blocking Britain from deporting Abu Qatada, who's known as Osama bin Laden's right-hand man in Europe. And I thought, well, it was hardly going to be Abu Hamza, was it?
The top judge in the European Court of Human Rights apparently is a British guy, Sir Nicholas something, Bratfer, something like
Doesn't
that.
Doesn't sound very British to me.
Well, he's got Sir in his name.
Yeah, you know, he's called Nicholas.
It goes a long way.
He also refused to meet Cameron directly. I think it was him. Cameron went to try and have this out with him, man to man, you know, in that way that they do at Eton. And he refused to meet him. And according to one report I read, it was because he was rather disgracefully carrying on hearing cases. I mean, that's not gentlemanly,
no,
is it?
No, that's
really?
Not
just
good.
Carrying on with your job.
I'm all in favour of Cameron taking time out to go to Strasbourg. It's him coming back, I object to him.
I think this is to do with evidence procured by torture, isn't it? The government seems to have the attitude to it, similarly to the attitude they probably have to foie gras. They know that an enormous amount of cruelty has been involved, but it really is rather delicious nonetheless.
David Cameron visited Strasbourg to tell the European Court of Human Rights that it was damaging human rights. It's like trying to promote peace by invading Iraq. Okay, that's a really bad example. He accused the European Court of Human Rights of having a corrosive effect on public support for civil liberties before insisting that black is white, up is down, and Nick Clegg is a dear, dear friend. 2 points to Rebecca. Hugo, who's decided the one size cap doesn't fit all?
This would be the House of Lords.
Yes.
This week they threw out the government's proposed cap on benefits. The government wanted to cap benefits at, I think it's £26,000. It's the equivalent to what you'd take home on a salary of, I think it's £35,000. And the House of Lords couldn't imagine anyone living on such a tiny sum and said, this is positively inhumane. The Archbishop of Canterbury was particularly upset, but then his benefits include a palace and lots of frocks, so he sort of had to be. But no, so this has been thrown out, so the government's going to keep trying to get it through in various other ways as if it hadn't been thrown out.
Cameron's been on this divide and rule mission, basically trying to pit the badly paid against people on benefits. So he sort of goes around to ordinary people working in the places where ordinary people work, and they're jolly good with their hands, many of them. And he goes and says, OK, right, none of you guys earn very much, am I right? Yep, good, because that's as it should be, because, you know, let's be honest, if you were paid properly, your boss wouldn't be able to make major donations to the Tory party. But joking aside... How do you feel about your taxes going to support people who aren't working? Because that is exactly how it works when you pay your taxes. They don't go to pay for Trident. They don't go to pay bonuses at RBS. They go straight to the green room of the Jeremy Kyle show.
Do you know, in all the years I've worked with you, Jeremy, I've never been really clear about your politics. The House of Lords has come down on the side of single mothers. That's basically what's happened. And you'd think, well, that's fair enough, isn't it? Because if it wasn't for children born outside of marriage, the aristocracy would have died out centuries ago.
I know of a woman, right? She's got four kids. She's never worked. She's got an enormous house right in the centre of London. Could I make this point any more ham-fistedly than I am?
In London, they said that hundreds of families could be forced to leave their homes and move to a cheaper part of the country. And you think, how are they going to get there? Have you seen the price of trains? The Lords have rejected proposals in the welfare reform bill that single parents should pay to use the child support agency and that child benefit should be included in a benefit cap of £26,000 per year. The revolt was led by bishops, which was hard because they're only able to move diagonally. You know, that's made me really happy. That's made me really happy. David Cameron is convinced the benefit cap is popular with the public, having run it past a black man he met in Plymouth. The figure of £26,000 was chosen by the government as it equates to the earnings after tax of someone in an everyday profession, such as moat cleaner, grouse beater or wet nurse. 2 points to Hugo. Steve, whose taxes are in a bit of a state?
America's,
yes,
presumably.
States, yes.
This would be POTUS, as they call him. The world's clumsiest and most graceless acronym. President of the United States. They have this strange thing in America where once a year, the president is allowed an hour of primetime television to talk about how marvellous he is and how marvellous everything is. Can you imagine primetime TV in Britain? They suddenly handed over for an hour to David Cameron to tell you how marvellous everything is. I mean, you'd be on the Dave Channel before you could say POTUS, really, couldn't you? So he mainly talked about taxes and how the very rich ought to pay more taxes, which was handy because Mitt Romney, the leading Republican candidate, had to declare his tax return this week. And it turned out he'd only paid 13% tax on an income of $41 million. But it isn't true that all very rich Americans are sort of selfish, tax dodging. Bill Gates, for example, yeah, who's the richest man in the world, he used to be, is giving it all away. This week, he gave away another $750 billion, but he also popped up in Deptford in southeast London. He popped up and spoke to a school assembly.
Hello, I want to tell you how to be a success in business.
In his kind of Kermit the Frog voice, yes. Apparently, he was very good. He spoke for 40 minutes, and then he suddenly said, sorry, Microsoft ex-chairman has encountered a problem and needs to close. And... and left. But he's, you know, he's an American billionaire who seems like a decent
good egg.
Well, also, but, Obama referenced in the State of the Union this thing called the Buffett rule, suggested by Warren.
You can't
Buffett.
Go until everyone's been... No.
Yeah, no, that was very much it, really. The Buffett rule, I think, says that millionaires should not be paying less tax proportionately than their secretaries.
Mitt Romney has now been replaced as the Republican front runner.
By
Newt Gingrich, yeah, despite the fact that he previously stole Christmas.
Americans must be starting to wonder, you know, when they're looking at an election in which the three main candidates are called Barack, Newt and Mitt. You know, I mean, there are IKEA storage cabinets with more sensible names than this. But Nancy Pelosi, the Democrat leader in the Congress, said this really weird thing today, where she was being interviewed on something, and she said, oh, Newt won't become president. There's something I know.
Oh.
Dun, dun, dun. And she didn't reveal what this was, but obviously there's...
It's that he won't become president.
But their whole election thing is so much more exciting than ours, isn't it? I mean, Obama apparently is now going to go on the road with this State of the Union message, and he's first going to go to the swing states. You think, oh, what next? The hip-hop states, the disco states. I mean, I just think it all sounds so much more exciting.
Gary Young of The Guardian pointed out on Twitter that the front runners are a Catholic who's thrice married and believes in open marriage and a Mormon who is a monogamist. World turned upside down. More pertinently, the Mormon clearly can't drink tea or coffee. You can't have a man like that in the White House. He'll be asleep halfway through the day.
Did you see that Obama says his most treasured possession is the flag that was carried by the Navy SEAL team who shot Osama bin Laden?
And the ball that they balanced on their nose.
President Obama pledged to tackle the tax breaks of the super rich in his State of the Union address as Mitt Romney's tax affairs continued to dominate the Republican presidential race. In his speech, Obama said that every American deserved a fair shot, delighting gun owners and terrifying deer. Obama said that the millionaires should be subject to the Buffett rule, named after Warren Buffett, which is a light wind that annoys rabbits. That's two for me now. I'm loving the bishop and I'm loving the rabbits. OK.
I think loving the bishop is a euphemism.
Not for me. Right. At the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and Steve have got 4 points, but in the lead, Jeremy and Rebecca with 5. We start round two with a TV guide listening for the Sci-Fi Horror Channel.
7:45 p.m. The Unbreakable. 9:45 p.m. The Broken.
And our thanks to William Lynch of Kesgrave in Suffolk for sending us that. Jeremy, who told MPs he's no virgin when it comes to drugs?
Sir Richard Branson, entrepreneur of this parish. We used to call people like him bloated capitalists, but in these more enlightened times, we say capitalist with irritable bowel syndrome. His has been a heartwarming story, a sort of riches to extreme riches story. And his latest vanity project, of which there have been many, he's tried cola, he's tried vodka, he's tried paddling a zeppelin up the Amazons. And the latest one is Virgin Opinions. It's not enough that he's taken over public transportation and we've handed him a bank on a plate. We have to listen to his half-baked ideas now. Well, this one might not be half-baked. It's the legalisation of drugs. Rich pickings there, eh, Rich? Why should drugs be in the hands of warlords and gangsters and not in the hands of responsible capitalists like Sir Richard Branson? And, of course, that would add to the armoury of excuses on Virgin Trains. We apologise for the late running of... Oh, what? It's late. It's just... Oh, really sorry. I can't... What? I've lost the train. Oh, what?
It'd be great on a train, wouldn't it? We have a fantastic range of sandwiches, crisps and hot and cold smack.
I like the idea of sort of virgin drugs perhaps being bundled in with your phone and your broadband and getting a leaflet through the door that says virgin drugs make you up to 30 times higher. But they'd only actually make you about 2 times higher. And then you try and get through to the helpline to sort of complain about it and they'd say to sort of put your bong out and light it again and see if that helped.
Have you ever done that drug thing? I don't smoke anything. I worry about the dangers.
That's a good idea. Let's talk about all the illegal things we've done in the public domain.
I hope nobody's recording this conversation.
I've never done anything. I worried it would stunt my growth.
I never have, which I genuinely never have taken drugs at all. I'm reiterating that because my children are here tonight. I just want to make that very clear.
Yes.
I've never taken drugs. But it does actually put me rather out of the loop now in conversations like this. You know, if I were to say something like, you know, bong or pot or marijuana. Yeah.
Local
weed. You sound like a high court judge, so I just feel out of the loop.
Drugs are very weird because it's the only area in politics where having no experience whatsoever of the subject is the only way of being involved in making policy. Because Branson admitted, as part of this, he admitted that he had smoked cannabis, which I think if you look at a picture of him when he was 21, you'd probably work out. Do you see the picture in the mail? He looked exactly like Austin Powers when he was young. Even down to the teeth. It was very odd.
I was disappointed at the photo of the meeting that they had between him and the government, because I thought it was going to be like a sort of dark, smoky den with sexy music playing and Keith Vaz passed out on a beanbag, but it wasn't. It was just people sitting perfectly normally. Richard Branson has told a Home Affairs Select Committee that drugs should be decriminalised and regulated by the Department of Health. The committee were initially against Branson's idea, but after trying some of the delicious cookies he kindly brought, slowly came round to it. Branson said any employee in his company taking drugs would not be fired automatically, so good luck if you're flying with Virgin soon. That's all. 2 points to Jeremy. Rebecca, who's looking for a dainty dish to set before the Queen?
The Duchess of Cornwall has announced a sort of competition for school children to cook something for the Golden Jubilee.
Diamond Jubilee,
yeah. That's the one. They have to invent a dish which is completely original and that will thrill and delight the Queen and the Duchess of Cornwall, and then they get to go to Buckingham Palace and prepare it for her. Now, my one word of warning on this would be that my mum was a teacher throughout her career, and she would never actually eat anything that the children had prepared because she was convinced that it was 99% bogey. So I think it's probably worth just mentioning that to the Duchess of Cornwall. I will be writing to
her. That may be the direction they want to go in. That may be,
it might be. It would be original, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Do you know what the last dish is that was created for Her Majesty?
Coronation chicken?
Coronation chicken.
It looks a bit like it might be 99% bogey, but I've never had it.
Did they have abdication chicken for the...
Yes, and Prince Andrew has lunch with an arms dealer flan. I don't know. Surely we need to be a bit more adventurous. A roast corgi or something.
It'd be a crime not to use swan, actually. It's the one time you can.
Yes, that's true.
Oh, curry, swan vesta. Do you think this is Camilla just trying to ingratiate herself with the Queen? Because there's this thing that, oh, she'll never be Queen, that one. And I think she's trying to sort of ingratiate herself.
Well, apparently she came up with the idea herself.
Well, Camilla did, or the Queen
did. Yeah, no, Camilla did.
I'm bloody starving. Get some children to make me some tea.
She's probably invited herself over to Buckingham Palace then.
Yes, to create a meal with children. Well, the Queen's probably fed up going to Highgrave and eating those overpriced biscuits. I did pantomime a couple of years ago at the Old Vic, and we had a bit where children came up onto the stage and took part in a cooking scene. And I turned to this child, and he must have been about 8, and I said, what would you put in this dish to make it a bit more tasty? And I was expecting him to say salt or pepper, and he said, without a moment's hesitation, herbs de Provence. Tells you something about the Old Vic's demographic, I think.
I took my son to a party once at a big soft play centre, and they provide food, and it's kind of, you've got a choice of nuggets and chips, baked potato and chips, baked potato and nuggets, you know. And we'd just got back from Italy. He'd been having some quite adventurous food, and the mum of the party boy said, oh, just before you go off and play, what do you want to eat? And he went, swordfish?
The Duchess of Cornwall has launched the snappily titled British Food Fortnight's Cook for the Queen's Diamond Jubilee Competition. Or BFFCFTQDJC, for short, to find a new dish as popular as that previous royal creation, Coronation Chicken. Coronation Chicken was invented in 1953 by Rosemary Hume, who won a competition to prepare the sandwich filling that most closely resembled phlegm. 2 points to Rebecca. Hugo, why is a husband's place in the home?
There has been a massive rise in house husbandry.
Mm.
Sounds like animal husbandry.
It does.
But it's quite, I was talking to someone the other day, irrelevantly, about why did you get midwifery and animal husbandry?
Mm.
There's no punchline. It's just, but if you want to save that and use it later, feel free.
It's good to see you lead a rich and full life.
Yes. Can we pretend the last 30 seconds never happened? There's been a massive rise in house husbandry.
Do you want me to ask the question again?
Yeah, Hugo, go on, please. Yeah.
You've got a brand new baby, haven't you, Hugo?
Yeah.
And he's not really...
Very new.
Not quite awake sometimes, are
not
you?
Even slightly. No.
It goes. How old are yours now, Rebecca?
13 and 10.
So just started sleeping through the night?
Just about.
Yes.
Good, yeah.
Mm. Are you shattered?
Yeah, it's been a lot easier this time than last time, actually.
But that's because with the second one, you don't really pay attention.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Honestly, I've got three. The first one, right, they cry, you run up the stairs, you run into the bedroom. The second one, you run upstairs and you wait outside the door and see if they carries on. And the third one, you run upstairs and shut the door. So could you be house husbandy? Would you do that?
Yes, suppose. The Telegraph reported on this massive rise in house husbands and said the true number of stay-at-home fathers could actually be much higher, as the ONS figure does not take account of men who describe themselves as writers.
I think it's that's rather sweet image. Do you not think so? This simple burping creature looking after a child. I think it's so silly.
I think it's tripled in 15 years, the number of men staying at home. But it shows the weird and sexist way that the media portrays stuff, because this isn't a massive rise in professional women being the main breadwinner. It's a massive rise in men staying at home. You know, and it's the other way of the same story. Again, no punchline to that either.
No, but I was just thinking that you said that it has tripled in the last 15 years, which is about as long as the PlayStation has been invented. I mean, it's an odd coincidence, is all I'm saying. One of the house husbands described being elbow deep in dirty nappies. And I think you've got that wrong. You use your elbow to test the temperature of the bath. The temperature of the poo is neither here nor there. It's not.
No, you use the baby to test the temperature of the bath. You can burn your elbow.
That's the number of men living as house husbands has gone up threefold in the last 15 years to 62,000. The trend for men staying at home has been linked with higher wages for women and Sky having some kind of sport on 24 hours a day. The figures were compiled by the Office for National Statistics. Researchers knocked on doors and then listened out for a crying toddler and a desperate man shouting, "I'll be there in a minute." Anastasia Duval, head of families policy at the think tank Civitas, said a few decades ago the idea of the primary carer being a man would have been emasculating, before patting her husband on the bottom, handing him a tenner and saying, "You've worked hard today, treacle, treat yourself." 2 points to Hugo. Steve, who thinks a drink at the local shouldn't be a taxing affair?
If you sort of picture in your head...
Yeah.
Typical British village, you know, and there's a little Norman church with a clock and a post office and a grocer's and a red phone box. And thing is, none of those things are there anymore. There's only a pub. And the pub has to do all those other things, sell stamps. And there's a feeling that the social role of pubs is not recognised.
Yep.
Because pubs provide a lot of valuable social services. They provide a valuable forum for stolen goods, for example. They provide a place where large groups of men can watch deeply divisive sporting events in a confined space. They have a valuable effect on certain careers. Darts, for example. It's very difficult to find anywhere else where you can throw a pointed metal object across a room whilst drinking beer without health and safety poking their oar in. So... yeah, it's a move to have the social function of pubs in certain areas recognised.
And how would they do that in a rather typical Tory manner? How would they do this?
They're going to give them some kind of tax break.
No, they would give them a 50% tax break.
I read the story and I thought you could call it a pubsidy.
But there's a limit to how many community events a pub can host at the same time. You couldn't have, I don't know, speed dating and a wake. You don't have those things together. Are you a pub person? Are you trying to be like, go to pub?
I like pubs. I think the trouble is that landlords are not such good listeners as they used to be, because you need a landlord you can go up to and look down in the mouth and they'll say, "So what's wrong?" And you tell them all your problems and then they say, "That'll be £4.70, please." I mean, I think that it should be homes of counselling, because therapy is incredibly expensive. Mm. And hairdressers are only so tolerant of... depression. But I think that they need to be more like proper bartenders who just polish glasses needlessly, small shot glasses with a dirty rag, endlessly. Say, "So, buddy, tell me your story." And you
and
say,
then have them skimming across the counter at you. Not the bartender, but the glasses.
That's right.
Living in a dream world. Pubs that improve community life should be given a 50% reduction in business tax, according to a report by the Institute for Public Policy Research. The think tank point out that pubs provide invaluable services like the pub quiz, which trains local people to correctly identify hail and pace in a picture round. And at the end of round two, the scores are Hugo and Steve have got 8 points, but Jeremy and Rebecca remain resolutely in the lead with 9. Before we start round three, here is an advertisement from the newsletter of the Church of the Ascension in Telham.
Ladies, don't forget the rummage sale. It's a chance to get rid of those things not worth keeping around the house. Bring your husbands.
And our thanks to S. Edworthy from Battle for sending that in. Jeremy, who's been telling the truth about dishonesty?
Well, it's a survey which has revealed that British people are less honest than we were 10 years ago. But the presumption is that honesty is always the best policy. And honesty isn't always the best policy. It's okay to lie if by telling the truth you're going to get yourself into a lot of trouble, or if you're going to hurt someone's feelings needlessly, or if you're taking part in a survey. Because surveys are entirely useless because by their nature they are self-fulfilling, because the questions are loaded and people are highly impressionable. You go up to somebody in the street and you say, does the fact that people find the world a scarier place than they did 10 years ago, A, scare you, B, scare you a lot, or C, both? Then you find people are terrified. So just lie, because it'll just throw all the statistics out completely. And they won't know what to make of it.
I have to say, I found that my son was rubbish at lying. And when he was about four, I remember calling through to him. He was in the next room. I said, darling, what are you doing? He said, I'm just putting some jam on the sofa. It's quite hard to get cross then, isn't it?
This survey could mean the exact opposite, because it could just mean in the past people used to lie about how dishonest they were, and now they're honest about how dishonest they are.
But lying on job applications, surely we've all done that, have we not? I mean, I applied BBC for a job in the canteen. I ended up here, so I...
Well, I always say, if you steal from a supermarket, and let's face it, that's not very serious, if you steal from... Or if you lie...
It's the Anthony Worrell Thompson defence.
Oh, well, yeah, but he's a millionaire. Most people doing it are old ladies nicking a tin of cat food or something like that. They say, yes, but by stealing from a supermarket, you're passing that on to honest people, as though that's what happened. They don't say, well, people economising is reducing supermarket profits, and that's passing that on to other people. They don't say supermarket bosses being paid millions of pounds a year is what's being passed on to other people. It's only us decent, honest liars who get blamed for things.
Sometimes you can't help what happens. One of the questions was, would you avoid paying the fare on public transport? Yes, because honestly, sometimes, even if I jump up and down, the bus driver doesn't see me, so I... Hardly my fault.
One of the things that came across, in fact, was that people were apparently, according to the survey, more shocked by fare dodging than they were by people having affairs, which...
Really?
Interesting, that's what they said. But then the survey was done in Essex. And I'm from Essex, so I'm allowed to say that.
Research by academics at the University of Essex. Found that British people are less honest than they were in the year 2000. Yes, a decade ago, our Prime Minister was honest Tony Blair. It was a time when no one lied. Just ask Alistair Campbell. In the last 10 years, we've had bankers fiddling the economy, MPs fiddling expenses, and even I have been living a lie. I'm actually 6'1", just so you know. Did you see? This has nothing to do with the news quiz. Did you see? I was in the news this week. Did you see this? I've just been made Chancellor of a university. Yeah, I know. So I was thinking maybe we could, like in a sort of German way, you could refer to me as Chancellor from now on. So, Chancellor. Yes, University of Portsmouth, the new Chancellor.
Oh, Polly.
Them there is fighting words.
Were you elected or were you...
I don't know how it works. I didn't ask.
Did you just seize power in a putsch?
Yeah, I shoved Sheila Hancock out the way. 2 points to Jeremy. Rebecca, which dress code no longer gets workers' goatees?
Disney. Yeah. The Disney Corporation has, for 60 years, banned beards from its staff. Not all its staff, but what they call its cast members. So the people who have a direct interface with the customers. And they've not been allowed to have any kind of facial hair at all. This seems like a kind of arbitrary rule. The reasons are lost in the mists of time, but the only thing I could think of is that maybe somebody had misheard the lyrics of When You Wish Upon a Star and thought instead it was, you know, ban all whiskers from your staff or something. So for no apparent reason at all, they have not been allowed to wear beards, and right. Now they are. As of next Friday, they're allowed to wear beards if they want to. It's optional. It's not a beard necessity. Thank you.
I'm just going to let that linger in the air. The beauty
so
of it.
Finally, Richard Branson can get the job he truly deserves.
I wish they banned beards in McDonald's, do you not? Sometimes, honestly, you get served by somebody who looks like they're growing cress on their chin. So.
Sorry, were even the Seven Dwarfs not allowed beards? Because that's weird.
Yes. They were allowed beards as long as they were fake ones.
Well, you have to shave off your beard and then put on a beard.
What was the objection to Beatrix? They frighten the children or what?
Not neat enough, I suppose.
Not neat enough.
I don't know. They're notoriously conservative. It was only 2 years ago that female cast members were allowed to wear skirts with bare legs. I don't know what happened up until they had a full pelt of leg hair. I don't know what.
I think if you're in the Navy, you have to fill out a form and apply to grow a beard, I think. Seriously.
Yes, no, in the Navy you have to have a trimmed beard, don't you?
It's because you can't wear a gas mask with a beard because it doesn't create an airlock.
You're a mine of information.
Why on earth do I know that?
Rebecca, that whole thing about calling them cast members is a bit grandiose, isn't it? Mm. It's a bit like, I don't know, calling Lib Dems members of the government. It's a sort of a... It's so odd. It is a very strange place. I remember taking my daughter when she was four. We went to Euro Disney and Pluto came towards us. Now, Pluto was 6 foot tall and had a zip down his back and bent down to wave at my daughter. They don't speak, wave at my daughter. And as he went off, she said to me, that's not a real dog. I said, how did you know? As we watched, you know, 6 foot tall man in fun fur disappear. And she said, because his nose wasn't wet.
I went to Euro Disney once on a sort of drunken weekend with my girlfriend, now my wife. She isn't much younger than me. It was just a... This is starting very badly. We went as students to Euro Disney for a weekend, and in the gift shop, I tried on a plastic stormtrooper helmet and got it stuck. I couldn't get it off. I was sort of bent double as she tugged at my head and got a member of the store staff to help get it over my ears. And it was incredibly painful and embarrassing. And just the sort of story I thought, one day I'll share on the radio.
After a ban of 60 years, employees at Disney resorts are now allowed to sport a beard or goatee. This is excellent news for Father Christmas, who's been desperate for a summer job that still involves making dreams come true and stalking children. A spokesman from Euro Disney in Paris said, boof. And shrugged his shoulders before lighting a jitane and cycling off in a stripy shirt wearing onions. Well, like a good stereotype. Right. 2 points to Rebecca. Hugo, where isn't bringing up baby just the ticket?
This is a ridiculous story. Mm. This is the Olympics.
Yep.
If you want to take a baby to the Olympics, it needs to have its own ticket.
Yeah.
Which is just, man, what are you going to do? Leave it at the door? It reminded me of what happens on budget airlines, where you can buy two tickets for £4 or something, but then if you want to take an infant on board, they're like, oh, that'll be another £200. Even if you offer to keep it in the overhead locker, they're still like, no. You've got to pay for your infant.
To be honest, if you give a baby enough Calpol, it'll stay in your backpack for ages. So I think it's... But
they've got themselves into this really weird situation where they're now saying if you had a child who was conceived before you bought tickets,
right,
then you need to have had a ticket for it. But if your child was conceived since you bought tickets, then it's fair enough you don't have one and that's okay. Which is the maddest thing you ever heard, surely.
But you couldn't give a baby its own seat. They'd get concussion every time it flipped up. I mean...
Are they going to enjoy the Olympics? It's not too far away for them to see.
As much as anyone, let's be honest.
The London Olympics are reviewing their ticketing policy after parents discovered they would need to buy additional seats for babies who weren't even conceived when they first applied for tickets. So parents who already have tickets will have to buy another seat for their newborn baby, which may be in another part of the stadium. You wait here, darling. Mummy will be right back. 2 points to Hugo. Steve, listen to this. Steve, who might be told to beehive or buzz off?
Top punning.
Thank you.
This is a very silly story. I think it's from Wales, about a little heritage site. It's a mill, I think. It's an old mill. Then they get problems with vandals breaking in. And they want some sort of security measure, but they want it to be sustainable security, whatever that is. So they don't want any nasty electric lights or fences or anything like that. And what they've decided is a possible option is bees. Security bees, ladies and gentlemen. The idea is that they put some bees nearby and the vandals see the bees and they don't go. The thing is, if bees were any good at security, we wouldn't have any honey, would we? I mean... They can't even protect their own nectar-based storage facility.
The big worry that they had about this was the health and safety because of bee stings. Now, It's hardly a deterrent if it doesn't sting. There's a reason nobody thought, oh, I know, let's protect the property with kittens. Nobody...
I was writing something about hornets the other day, and I looked them up on Wikipedia, and the first sentence, I think, was, hornets, like bees, are a type of wasp. And I was like, what?
Bees won't hurt you because they die once they've stung you. Wasps are carnivorous and are by nature aggressive and have no place in decent society. You can kill them with no harm to the ecosystem, whereas bees, the only way you could get them to attack somebody is if you put the hive in such a place that the person would fall over the hive and then the bees will attack the person.
So you need a tripwire and a beehive.
But then you get an escalation, you see. It's like having armed police, because then you get vandals turning up with those smoke gun things.
I just think it's hard to replace a security guard with a bee, because you've got to teach them to hold a torch.
Yeah, but they're cheap bees. You can pay them in nectar points.
Bees could be used to deter vandals who have repeatedly targeted historic buildings. The bosses of Greenfield Valley Heritage Park in Wales are hoping to use swarms of bees to deter vandals. Similar projects elsewhere have seen a decrease in crime, although there has been a noticeable rise in break-ins by a small yellow bear and his piglet accomplice. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
This is from the Telegraph. The last remaining member of a once-thriving Elvis Presley fan club is appealing for new recruits. He plans to relaunch the club at a special Elvis night later this month and will also raise money for the Archway Foundation, an Oxford charity which helps people suffering with loneliness.
Ms. Front.
This was sent in by Elizabeth Else. And it's very topical because it's about Mitt Romney. Mr. Romney arrived in France as a 19-year-old Mormon missionary and spent 30 months trying to convert the French to a religion that prohibits sex outside marriage and alcohol.
Mr. Rifkin.
This is sent in by Lynn Rafferty, and it's from the Doncaster Free Press. And it says, Doncaster's newest choir is wanting members to join as it starts preparations for its next performance. Simply Voices now meets every Wednesday at the Doncaster School for the Deaf.
Mr. Punt.
This is from Cecile, and it's all the way from New Zealand, from the New Zealand Herald. In the corrections paragraph, we read the following. Queen Margarita I was the first woman to reign in Denmark, not Queen Margarita II, as reported last week.
Let's take a look at the final scores. Well, it's even, Stevens. Both teams have got 13 points. So in an entirely arbitrarily manner, I make this week's winners Hugo and Steve. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Daily Mail spotted by Jeff Pickthall.
A controversial new law forcing porn stars to wear condoms will come into effect in Los Angeles after being rubber-stamped by the city mayor.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Jeremy Hardy, Rebecca Front, Hugo Rifkin and Steve Punt. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Carolyn Brown. The chair script was written by Rodri Crooks, Simon Littlefield and Lucy Clark, with additional material by Benjamin Partridge, Angela Barnes and Dan Kiss. The producer was Duncan Middleton.